Hello and welcome to the Pall Mall Doughboys podcast, a World War I history podcast keeping alive what is often called the Forgotten War. Coming to you from Sergeant Alvin C. York State Historic Park in Pall Mall, Tennessee, on the banks of the Wolf River. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host today, Park Manager Nate Dotson.
Make your daddy glad to have had such a lad. Tell your sweetheart.
All right, hello everybody, and welcome to the Pall Mall Doughboys podcast. We've got a little different podcast episode for you today. We are going to be talking about an upcoming event that's coming up in just a few weeks, the Great War Expo on April 6th. But we do have a very special guest with us today. I guess not really a guest. He's a mainstay at the park, Park Ranger Tanner Wells. How's it going, Tanner?
It's going all right. I can't complain.
Thanks for sitting and chatting about this today. We had you on last episode with Lou Varnell, but we didn't really introduce you as we should have properly.
That was a footnote, me and my uncomfortable chair.
Will you tell us about your chair that you were on during the entire 45-minute?
Yeah, so when we were doing that podcast, we were recording literally in Lou's little museum, and we were in the Iraq War section, and he had there was an original staple of an American force, which was it was a metal folding chair that they had cut a hole into it. So it was essentially your porta potty, you know, you just
the field toilet.
Unfolded over a hole and you're good to go.
Tanner really took one for the team and sat in that chair the entire 45-minute conversation. So
it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the best either.
Yeah. Well, he made it through. So. Tanner's been a ranger here at Sergeant Alvin C. York State Park for how many years now?
Shoot. Going on 7, I think.
Okay.
I started there in 2016 as a seasonal commission ranger, and I've been there ever since.
Yeah.
Or I should say been here ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tanner was here when I got here in 2019, and we've done the events one after the other together and worked those for some years now. So a mainstay of the Pall Mall Doughboys, and actually one of the lucky few that got to go to France in 2018, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We were supposed to have more than what we started out with, and like when you originally hear the stories, we were working with the National Guard, and they're going to fly a big transport over there with a bunch of guardsmen, and we'd be tagging along with at least 5 Rangers, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh, well, you're flying one of those big birds, it's like $20,000 operating cost per hour. So they're like, we're not going to do that. It's not cost effective. So all of a sudden you go from a fairly large Tennessee contingent that was going up there, you know, with the anniversary of World War I, the Tennessee National Guard with the 30th Division and all that stuff. And then they pared it down. So now we're on a commercial flight, and instead of like 5 or more Rangers, it's just 3 of us and maybe a couple dozen National Guard officers. And then when we got to France, we find out one of the planes that had a bunch of National Guard officers on it had turned around for some reason. So all of a sudden, we're down to half the original National Guard contingent than that was supposed to be there, too.
Yeah.
It just got getting a little bit more chaotic in a way.
Well, I remember, you know, I wasn't at the park at the time, but I remember seeing the Facebook post of you guys in France, like the early morning, October 8th, the fog around you and everything.
Yeah, it was
pretty cool. I mean,
it was pretty surreal. It was pretty epic, to be fair. But no, it was an incredible trip. Now I will say, if we had 5 more Rangers, we wouldn't be able to fit all that into one Peugeot as we're driving through the French countryside. It is an awesome aspect that, like, on that morning walking that battlefield that Alvin was at the same time he would have been there, and the sun's rising and you get that the dew and the fog that rolls into the little valley that was there. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, Tanner's, you know, like I say, been a big part of a lot of the events at the park, and certainly going to be a big part of the upcoming Great War Expo that we've got. He's got a presentation that we'll talk about here in just a little bit. But so this is a new event at the park for us, Tanner. We have had each year in April, we typically have a small living history encampment known as Camp Gordon, And so we portray a training camp that Sergeant York went to in Camp Gordon, Georgia. And that kind of kicks off our year of programming, is that Camp Gordon event. And over time, it seems like, you know, we've had good turnouts, we've had good numbers and stuff, but it felt like this year was a good year to sort of shake it up and do something a little different. And so that's where the Great War Expo came in. Can you tell us, you know, why the date of April 6th, you know, why are we doing an event around that particular date? And what's the significance there in World War I history?
So when we always did our Camp Gordon program, we always tried to be as close to April 6th as possible. So it's usually that nearest weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's the idea because April 6th is the day the United States declares war on Germany and the Central Powers. And with that date, it marked a moment where we were transforming the U.S. military into something more than what it was. Because when we entered that conflict, we had the smallest standing professional military in the world. We were in many ways considered this laughingstock abroad. The U.S. Navy was probably the only really respected component of U.S. military at the time. You know, it defeated the Spanish Navy, what was left of the Spanish Empire at Manila Bay and then down in Cuba and Havana. And so you had these major naval engagements, but that was it. You know, you had 220,000 men and women that constitute the entire U.S. military, Army, Navy, Marines, and Coast Guard. And it's just this sad reality of this. That's all we had. And the British Army a year before went over the top with 130,000 men and suffered close to 70,000 casualties in the first hours of a battle that would take place for over 8 weeks. And so it was this idea that we need men, we need them fast, we need them now. So training camps popped up all over the place, and they constituted new types of warfare. Old ways were going out the window. You know, you get famous cavalry officers like George S. Patton, who's given an option. You know, you can either go infantry, you can go artillery, but here's an option. Would you be willing to create our new armor school? And so a lot of cavalrymen ended up in artillery because artillery is being towed by horses still largely. They can function and operate them efficiently. Or you can be on these machine gun teams in the infantry. But now we're creating the new armor school, and you get young officers with them like Dwight D. Eisenhower and Omar Bradley that would be amongst them. That would be famous names later on in the Second World War. But these camps pop up all over the place because we need a lot of troops. And when you go from 220,000 to over 4.5 million.
Right.
Men need to be trained somewhere. And it was this effort in the U.S. military structure and structures around the world where a trained soldier is more likely to survive, and a soldier who's more likely to survive is a little bit better of a soldier than one that thinks he's going to go in and just die for nothing. But it was this rushed, haphazard effort. And at towards the peak of American troops being sent overseas, we were sending like 250,000 men every month to Europe. But for us, it's this opportunity to seize on that idea of farm boys, and most of the country at times agrarian, so we're mostly farmers. Right. So a lot of farm boys like Alvin York are being drafted into service, being sent to these camps to be faced with a world that they've never experienced or never been a part of before, right, which is military life, and trying to make an army out of these boys. And when I say boys, you know, we're looking at more like 21 to 40 year old guys. Yeah. Most are averaging like Alvin around close to 30. But it is this aspect that these guys are being prepared for a life they'd never really been a part of before.
Yeah. I'm reading a really cool book right now that was actually recommended me by Dr. Michael Birdwell, who we can talk about here in just a minute. But he recommended, it's Jeanette Keith, Rich Man's War, Poor Man's Fight. And it's highlighting mostly the rural South and the draft and everything that happens around April 6th. And it's really neat to look into. You know, Rich Man's War, Poor Man's Fight typically is associated with the Civil War. But you could apply it, or at least the South at that time in 1917, they felt like it applied to them in World War I. And one neat thing that I've been looking through as I read is the Civil War was still a very fresh memory on in the country's mind in 1917. You've got Civil War veterans that, you know, their sons, their grandsons are the ones signing up for the for this next war.
They're even being invited to training camps to, to give impromptu talks. There was one camp that had a bunch of Civil War veterans that were Confederates, and, you know, they wanted to teach them the fearsome rebel yell, you know. So it was, these are guys that had experienced a war that tore the country apart.
And it was like, you know, the nation had forgotten the suffering that had taken place during the Civil War. And it was this mad rush to sign up and don't miss out on the excitement and the adventure that's overseas. Just like those the boys in 61, as they call them, you know, the Union and Confederate side both are they're signing up regardless of their fate might be.
Yeah, and World War I's also, like, talking on the, along those same lines, it's a war that was used also to build bridges between the South and the North and those veterans of old of the Confederacy and the Union. So you have these veterans from both sides that had been present in a lot of sites, and you had these essentially an impromptu reunions in a way. But even with the camp names, you know, you have a lot of camps and forts that would be established during that time that were named after both the Union and Confederate officers as this idea of truly bringing Americans all back together for a fight against a universal, unified foe, you know. And so you get camps all over the place, like Camp Gordon is one of those technically, but it's you have a lot of those throughout the country that are named after Confederate officers as this idea of kind of mending fences and truly bringing back into the fold this idea that these are all Americans.
Yeah, that's interesting. That it's a war that the South is joining the North in, you know, sending this full front of the U.S. Army, or the Expeditionary Force over to France. But so anyway, there's a lot of resources that talk about April 6th in the country and the politics that are going on at that time. But as you mentioned, we do this event in April to commemorate, you know, not only Alvin York's story, but all of these men that are coming in from across the country, and, you know, their lives are changed from that point on. So we felt like, you know, me and you had talked as Camp Gordon event plans started coming up, and we thought that... we were inspired anyway by our Veterans Day event, where we have a lot of guys come in with pretty extensive artifact collections, and they're just extremely knowledgeable. All the folks that come and volunteer with us at all of our events, they have devoted a lot of their lives to learning about World War I, and I felt like we could highlight them as much as we could with this expo. So. So anyway, I guess that's a little bit of why we're doing this on April 6th, and it actually just so happens that Saturday falls on April 6th, so
makes
we are
a little easier to schedule.
So that's pretty exciting this year that we are on the day that war was declared in 1917. So, but just to give everybody a little bit of a heads up, we'll talk about the expo and what we've got planned for it coming up here in a few weeks. The main event is going to be 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So everything kicks off at 10 a.m. There is a expo event area inside the barn. And so in the barn, you'll have displays and booths set up from all different organizations. There's a few that I'm really excited are coming. But again, most of them are longtime volunteers that have all those collections and tables and tables worth of original artifacts. So, you know, guys like Stan Kobe, Lou Varnell, who we talked to last week.
Andrew
A. Snip has extensive weapons collection. So those guys will be there. But in addition to that, we're bringing in some other organizations. I know the 82nd Airborne Museum is sending a representative. He's the archivist there at the museum is coming. And we've got the Fentress County Historical Society, which they have some really neat World War I artifacts and information of other veterans from Fentress County. So groups like that will be set up within the Expo Center. There'll be actually even a few people selling some stuff. We've got Susan Jarrett from Maggie May Clothing.
Yeah, she does some good stuff.
She does some really cool stuff. We've had her make some Red Cross kit for us before, but I know she does knitting.
She's done women's motor corps before. Mm-hmm. She's done a lot of knitting work. She made some other stuff for us not too long ago, too. She does a phenomenal job.
Yeah. So, you know, there'll actually be some opportunities to even walk away with some cool stuff at the event. So come prepared for that. And then there's a pretty good amount. I'd say, you know, a good portion of these folks are authors or they have published works of some kind. So they've been encouraged to bring those books or in Lou's case, he's got his documentary DVDs and stuff like that. So pretty neat that these folks are able to actually promote what they do within the Expo Center or the Expo area there in the barn. But that all begins at 10 a.m. in the York Barn. And then we've got lectures, and we're really excited about the lectures we've got lined up. And those are going to, you know, truly be a highlight of the event. These are folks that are coming in from pretty good ways, and we're going to talk about them. Our first lecturer is Haley Sheriff out of the Kansas City World War I Museum. We're really excited to get a representative from the museum. I've not been there myself yet.
We've talked about trying to make a trip up there for, what, a couple years now?
Right, yeah.
So I guess the next best thing, if we couldn't go there, is somehow getting someone to come here.
Yeah, that's
so
right. So we will make it up there someday, but we are really excited to have Haley join us, and she's going to kick off the lecture schedule at 10 a.m. with her lecture entitled Ordinary People, Monumental Stories, the National War I Museum and Memorial. So she, I'd imagine she'll be telling us, you know, what they do programming-wise at the museum. I follow them, and they seem to be doing a lot of stuff all the time. But I got a little brief bio here on Haley that I wanted to read to promote her and just kind of give you some background information on where she's coming from. So here's the bio on Haley. Haley Sheriff, the Learning and Engagement Specialist at the National World War I Museum and Memorial, oversees the design and implementation of the museum and memorial's public educational programming for free choice learners of all ages and contributes to on-site and online interpretive content for exhibitions, websites, and social media. Sheriff has produced materials for partnerships with Arlington National Cemetery, Harry S. Truman Presidential Library and Museum, the Charles F. Kettering Foundation, and the United States World War I Centennial Commission. Her writing, presentations, and organizational leadership contribute to the successful outreach of the institution's global education initiative. So, you know, obviously an amazing choice to send down here to the park for the Great War Expo and presenting on what the museum and memorial does. So we're really excited for Haley's presentation at 10 a.m. Next on the list at 11 a.m., immediately after, is Peter Belmonte. His lecture is entitled Play Ball, Doughboys and Baseball in World War I. I'm really excited about his presentation because we have done a little bit of that before. We've had a few throw-together doughboy pickup baseball games. And so Peter, we've got his bio here. I'll read it. Peter Belmonte is a retired U.S. Air Force officer, author, and historian. A veteran of Operation Desert Storm, he holds a master's degree in history from California State University. He has published articles, book chapters, reviews, and papers about immigration and military history. Pete has written several books, including Days of Perfect Hell, the U.S. 26th Infantry Regiment in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, October to November 1918, Forgotten Soldiers of the World War, America's Immigrant Doughboys, United States Army Depot Brigades in World War One, and Bullets, Bandages, and Beans. United States Army Logistics in France in World War One. So, Mr. Belmonte, obviously, he's written a lot of books.
Extremely well-versed.
Yes, yeah, he's got a lot of really cool topics, too, that really diverse array of topics and stuff. I want to read the Bullets, Bandages, and Beans. That one sounds cool. But yeah, Pete's presentation is at 11 a.m. Next on the list, and we're really excited to be hosting, this gentleman is Mike Cunha. He's at 1 p.m., his presentation, and he's going to be presenting, his title is America's Greatest Battle. So he's going to be talking Meuse-Argonne Offensive, and I'll read Mike's bio here. Mike Cunha is a native of Massachusetts and lives there with his family. Upon graduating high school, Mike joined the United States Army as an M1A1 Abrams tank crew member. Upon completion of his service, he went on to complete his Bachelor of Arts in History at Salem State College in Salem, Massachusetts. An educator by day, Mike spends his downtime with his family and researching the First World War. He reads voraciously, produces the Battles of the First World War podcast, has earned a black belt in Krav Maga. I hope I'm
Krav Maga.
Okay, and enjoys staying fit. As part of Lost Battalion tours with his good bud, Rob Laplander, Mike guides World War I battlefield tours in the Meuse-Argonne region of France, walking in the footsteps of our American doughboys. Really excited to host Mike. He, as mentioned in his bio, he operates the Battles of the First World War podcast, which we have actually had him on the podcast before. Ranger Brady interviewed him back last year, I guess. Obviously his podcast goes into amazing depth and
super detailed. I've listened to a number of those back in the early years before 2018, before the centennial, because we were all trying to get as prepared as possible. And he had done some amazing podcasts over the years. So we've been really, he's a great resource.
Yeah. And he, as mentioned too, he does battlefield tours in the Meuse-Argonne region. So he's going to be speaking with a lot of experience, and really excited about his presentation at 1 p.m. That day. So let's see, we've got next on the list at 2 p.m. is Darren Haas, and his lecture is entitled Creating Heroes, Joseph Campbell, Sergeant Alvin C. York, and the Heroic Journey. Darren Haas, I'll read his bio here real quick and we'll discuss him. Dr. Darren Haas is the historian and public affairs officer for the Tennessee Military Department. He started his military career as a rescue swimmer for the U.S. Navy and is currently a lieutenant colonel in the Tennessee Army National Guard with deployments to Iraq and Kosovo. Dr. Haas earned his PhD in public history from Middle Tennessee State University, where he wrote his dissertation about the discovery of Sergeant Alvin York and how the public promoted him as an American hero. Dr. Haas has published numerous articles in magazines like National Guard, Citizen Soldier, VFW, and others. He is currently the managing editor for the Tennessee Guardsman magazine. I just recently met Dr. Haas back at our last Veterans Day event at the Kidnap the Kaiser event, but you knew him before, right?
Yeah, he's been a kind of a staple here for years because he worked along with Dr. Birdwell, and for us it was a great experience having him here at the park. He'd do some living history with us for a little while, and then he was also on that trip in 2018 because – of course, he's with the National Guard,
right.
So he was with them and went to France as well. So we were all there together through all that. He's an awesome guy. We were really happy to have him back this last November.
Yeah, looking forward to his presentation too. And it was interesting. I saw he had registered for our Kidnap the Kaiser program that we've talked about with Sam Reed here on the podcast before, but. Dr. Haas was one of the visitors that was on the program, and I saw he was registered, and it's like, man, this guy is kidnapped the Kaiser expert. He had given presentations on the exact story. So it was like, you know, no pressure there. We've just got to get it exactly perfectly right. You can't mess anything up. But no, we really excited to have him join us, and representing the National Guard on that day. So last but not least, on our lecture schedule at 3 p.m., so this is our last lecture for the day, is Mr. Robert Laplander, and his presentation is going to be Hell's Half Acre, The True Story of the Lost Battalion. So, you know, no surprise there. He is the Lost Battalion expert, and really looking forward to his presentation. I've seen, I think, some other presentations he's done that are posted to YouTube or whatever else. But really excited to have him on site talking the 77th Lost Battalion story, because it's so closely related to Sergeant York's story. Yes. on October 8th. So let me read his bio real quick. Author and historian Robert J. Laplander is the leading authority on the U.S. 77th Division in World War I, and among the leading experts on the actions of the U.S. 1st Corps during the Meuse-Argonne Offensive. His book, Finding the Lost Battalion, Beyond the Rumors, Myths, and Legends of America's Famous World War I Epic, is the benchmark work on the Lost Battalion and their leader, Charles W. Whittlesey. He is a frequent guest on TV and radio, as well as digital and traditional news. He's also the directing manager of Doughboy MIA, the only organization in the world that researches for missing U.S. personnel from World War I. Together with his associate, Mike Cunha, he leads battlefield tours of the AEF battlegrounds in France, as well as being a professional musician. He lives in Waterford, Wisconsin, with his wife, three children, and two maniacal dogs. So that's pretty exciting to have Laplander join us. As he mentioned in his bio, he's a director manager of Doughboy MIA, which will have a few other individuals that work for that organization, Pete Cash being one of them. So looking forward to learning more about what they do and how they do it. So the Laplander is again our last lecture for the day at 3 p.m. And, you know, it's going to be hard, I think, for people to choose which lecture they want to come to.
It can be because we're going through the day, we're having various other programs going on, there's going to be food vendors and the like, so you can honestly, if you time yourself well, you can literally stay all day and like catch everything.
Yeah.
You gotta be mindful that sometimes if you're gonna go to one of those little demonstrations or workshops, that you're cutting a good 30 minutes out of what would have been that hour length right. presentation.
Yeah, we're making it hard on folks to have to choose what they want to do, but hey, we want to offer as much as we can in a day's time, so there's definitely a lot to pick and choose from.
And I'm pretty excited about Laplander too, because him talking about the 77th, and we kind of briefly mentioned, it's like without the Lost Battalion story, you really don't have Alvin's story. So it's always one of those incredible things about this narrow section of the front that has Mount Fancan, it has the 82nd pushing through to Chateau Chery with Alvin's regiment, and then of course the 77th Division just a couple kilometers west of there.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating aspect of how many significant stories are taking place in such a narrow, condensed area over a very short period of time.
Yeah, absolutely, and so closely related to our story here at the park. So, next on the list, we're going to talk our workshop schedule. So, like we said, you're going to have to kind of choose between what you might want to take part in on the day of, which we didn't want to make it too hard of a decision, but. Our workshops are going to kick off, so they're going to be kind of staggered. They start at 10:30 in the morning. So, yeah, you can catch 30 minutes of a lecture and then maybe go catch a workshop if you can. But the first workshop is at 10:30. It's entitled Packaging Hard Bread and Other Rations for the Modern Doughboy. That one's going to be cool. That's led by Sam Reed, who has been on the podcast before, if you want to listen back to that episode. Sam has done this before for us here at the site. He has made some rations and really cool stuff. Can you tell us?
He's an amazing craftsperson. So he's made everything from packaging and making very authentic looking hard bread rations to fig rations. He's done candles and all sorts of things for, that were typically found in like a kit or a pack that a soldier
and
would carry.
He goes into great, you know, perfect detail.
Really good detail.
Like the fonts and the...
like when you're looking at the trench periscopes he's done, he's had stamps. So he's got authentic stamps markings on them. He's made identification books, so the fonts and the format and everything is identical and doesn't hurt that he's using 1915 cameras to take the pictures of us to put them in those. So
you know, one
he's
of the
incredible.
Coolest rations I remember from 2018 was the... it was the one that was encased in like a wax. Was it the coffee and sugar ration?
So we had done a 1910 modeled 1910 ration that had the instant coffee, the sugar, the pepper and salt in it, and it has this wax coating on the outside of it. I still got a couple of those. I've been holding on to those since he made them, and they are incredible. I almost forgotten that he had done those, but they are fantastically well done. Authenticity is big for him.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It shows.
Yeah, so this workshop is going to be good for any living historian out there that wants to add some items to their kit, you know, be it hard bread or whatever. Sam is going to go into detail, and I think from what I understand, you might make one or two up or something there in the workshop. So that's at 10:30, packaging hard bread and other rations for the modern doughboy. The next workshop is at 11:30, and it is entitled Find Your World War I Soldier Genealogy Workshop. So that is from some folks here in-house, Interpretive Ranger Cassie Kasmark, and actually our Administrative Assistant Alec Parsons. They've already done this this workshop, or they will have by the time of the event. They've got a workshop coming up separately on March 22nd. But then they're doing it again on April 6th. And what their whole goal is to instruct folks or to assist them in finding their ancestor that may have fought in World War I and the best practices and steps to do that, resources, you know, websites to look up and the different things you can find. You know, their registration card, start with that, and then you find their veteran service card, et cetera.
And one of the big limitations for a lot of people doing genealogical research is knowing what resources you have and what's available. And so they're awesome about going through that process because not only knowing about the resources, but how feasible economically is it? You know, it's like, do I have to pay money for this or that? But going through utilizing the Tennessee State Library and Archives and their electronic library and the tools that they have access to that to find these individuals. It's super beneficial to anyone that really wants to dig into their family's past.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's at 11:30. If you have an ancestor that you know fought in World War I, but you don't know much about them, go to that workshop, and they're going to be walking you through those steps to locate a little bit more information. The next one is going to be after lunch on that day at 1:30 p.m. This is entitled Flash and Recoil, Infantry Weapons of the World War, led by yours truly, Tanner Wells. can you tell us about what your plans are for that workshop?
So for me, it's trying to be as hands-on as possible, but going into the basic infantry weapons. Covering like rifles, the bayonets, the light automatic rifles. We'll have a couple options that will be lent to us by individuals like Lou Varnell and the like that will help me out with that. But being able to give a good understanding of how things had evolved over a very brief period of time, over a good 20, 30 year span into what individuals are seeing in World War I. And in many ways, you'll see people look at like an old model 1917 Enfield and be like, oh, is that an M1? It's like, no, it's not. But you're already starting to see those similarities that you see in the World War II era of firearms and weaponry that infantry are carrying, because it's definitely heavily influenced by World War I and the needs of a massive, rapidly mobilizing army. So there's a lot of neat aspects to it, and for me, trying to delve into it as much as I can so that someone can take away a little bit more than what they came with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that would be a cool one. And there's definitely going to be a lot of infantry weapons to look at in the expo area and everything. But But I think, the whole idea behind these workshops, a little bit more hands-on. You'll get to kind of see it up close, see the working functionality of the weapon and everything. And Tanner is certainly our weapons expert here on site, so you're definitely going to be you're going to walk away with a lot of information.
And I'll always say I don't know that much, but I know enough to be dangerous.
The next workshop after that, and this is the last for the day, is at 2:30 p.m., and it's entitled Stamping Your Story, Doughboy ID Tags. And this is a program that the Pall Mall Doughboys have done, historically a few times in the past at different events. But it is a really very impactful one, and it's a lot of fun, actually, to do this. So we've got a 100-year-old original stamping kit for ID tags. And so these were round discs that you could hit with a metal stamp that had lettering, and you could hit with a hammer. And these guys were making them individually in their units. And it would spell out their name, their rank. Sometimes, like on the back, they would even have their religion.
Yep. Yeah, like for Catholics, they'll have like call a priest on the back.
Yeah.
For doing last rites.
Right. And so it was a way to be able to track these soldiers. Of course, they would carry two tags with them.
It's also a very personal item.
Right.
And a lot of people don't forget about that, because it is this aspect that this is something intimately is a part of you, because it's your name, it's who you are. So in the event that something bad does happen to you, it's a means that it can bring solace to your family, knowing that you're not just simply missing and in some faraway prison camp or whatever happens to be the case, forgotten. Because there's still over 1,000 American soldiers labeled as missing in action in the Meuse Argonne to this day. And the ID tag at least says, we kind of know where he is. We knew what happened to him because he's somewhere on that battlefield still. It's not, he's just disappeared. You have some idea. And it's consoling to family members, typically, especially at the time, that they've been killed in action. They fail doing their duty and their service to their country, rather than being like they're missing, that perpetual empty void that can't be filled.
Right. It is a very personal item, and you'll actually. So we're going to talk the history of ID tags, and then you'll actually get the opportunity to make your own. For this particular workshop, you do have to register for this. We only have sort of limited supplies. So if you get on tnstateparks.com website, find our parks, our Grand Mesa York State Park, and the upcoming events, you can actually register for the Doughboy ID Tags program and make sure that you do that. Because I think we have a fairly limited number of folks that can stamp a tag, again, just because of supplies. But you're still welcome. If you don't register for making your own tags, you can still sit in and take part in the program and learn quite a bit. Now, I guess just to wrap up the ID tags workshop, you had a pretty cool experience in France with this exact thing. And the ID tags, like you say, being a very personal item that brings light to somebody's story, happened to you guys.
Yeah, so we had gone, it was October 7th, they were doing a ceremony in the village of Chateau-Cherry, which is the sister city of where our park is at, which is Pall Mall, or Pall Mall, Tennessee, depending on who's reading it on a map. But it is an aspect that we were there, and we're doing this. They did this presentation. Well, after the presentation, the ceremony was wrapped up, we're talking with different people. Me and my then manager, Josh Wagner, were kitted up in World One kit, but Hobart Aiken was there in his Class A Tennessee State Parks uniform, and this little French boy with his mother walked up to him and essentially handed him a pair of dog tags, or a dog tag that he had found on one of the neighboring ridges. So when you're looking at the valley where Alvin's action takes place, you have Hill 223 on kind of the north end of Chateau-Cherry, and then there's this ridge line on the essentially towards, for a little further south, it runs along the center line of Chateau-Cherry going west. and the boy was on that ridge line and found those dog tags. Well, those dog tags happened to be to a gentleman who he was on the wall at the Meuse Argonne Cemetery as one of the missing in action.
Wow.
And he was from a Pennsylvania National Guard unit that had been pushing that ridge line, and he's been essentially missing all this time. And then he found that dog tag, and which in many ways is like, hey, he's still up there. He's not as missing as we think he is.
Right.
But it was very much this moment of kind of confusion of why is he giving us a dog tag? And then the realization that they probably find a lot of these on a regular basis.
Right.
And that kind of that idea that this is being given to Hobart essentially on the day, 100 years later, that gentleman had gone missing.
Right.
So it's pretty powerful when you think about just things 100 years ago, you completely disconnected from, all of a sudden you're being given a dog tag of a man that went missing on that day 100 years before.
Right.
So
you guys brought that tag back stateside, and then it went to Pennsylvania to museum.
So Joseph tried to see, and he did some genealogical research trying to see if the gentleman still had family left. And from what Joseph could tell, the last of his family died or passed away in the early 20-teens. And so at that point, there was no one left. So he reached out to the Pennsylvania National Guard to see about turning over this dog tag of one of their missing, and took it up to them. And I believe the effort to find that gentleman was picked up. And I'm struggling right now to try to remember that guy's name.
Right.
But I believe Laplander's group picked up on trying to see if they could find him as well.
Yeah.
To continue that effort.
Yeah, that story has just always been amazing to me, it just kind of gives you a motivation to kind of keep doing these things and keep the history alive as we're attempting to do here at the event. So, that's awesome, Tanner. I appreciate you going through the workshops, lecture stuff with me. That is pretty much what we've got. Our last thing at the event that you can check out, and this is kind of a holdover from our previous Camp Gordon events that we talked about earlier, but we'll have a small living history encampment with some doughboys out there. You'll get the opportunity to drill with a wooden rifle, as the doughboys did in the early days of the camps, and then maybe even crawl through some barbed wire obstacle courses and everything else. So a little bit of hands-on stuff and some stuff that the kids would like to do, and that'll be located in and around the barn, around the event area. So that is the Great War Expo coming up on April 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., We've got lectures, workshops, and then some living history encampment stuff out there. But we really encourage everybody to join, because I think there's something for the historian, the avid historian, and there's something for the casual observer, somebody that may not know that much about World War I. I think you can walk away with a whole lot of really cool experiences from this one-day event.
And if you get a little hungry in between, there'll be some food vendors there.
Yeah, we'll have some food vendors on site all day on Saturday. And then, of course, there's some local options close by. But, you can come and stay for the day. And we really look forward to the expo. And I think what we'll probably do, Tanner, too, is if we have time while we're running around doing all of this stuff, we're going to try to take this recorder with us and do some in-the-field recordings.
That'd be awesome.
So be looking out for an episode with some, in the field recording interviews and stuff. Actually, one shout-out I do want to give before we sign off is one of our own rangers, our assistant chief, Travis Bowe. His son, Atticus Bowe, is going to be here at the in the expo center. And he has been planning this for probably about a year now, Tanner?
Thereabouts.
He has made a Lego model of, the Hill 223, the battle grounds in which Sergeant York was fighting. And he has made a scale model with his Lego set. And he's very excited about setting up and talking about that. Atticus has been our Doughboy of the Year before, yeah. And he runs messages and is a huge War One enthusiast.
And in many ways, too, is like he's an avid historian in his own right, because he's been telling for one of our years we did Somewhere in France, so he did the portrayal of like the French orphan boy, which historically, just as he was portraying it, were being adopted by American regiments and units, and so he dressed up as best he could, and it looked very spot on to what you would have seen 102, 103 years ago, thereabouts. So it's a phenomenal aspect that, like, he's done his research, he's looked into it, and he's very engaged in the history, which is fantastic.
Yeah, Atticus is definitely our youngest Pall Mall Doughboy, but we expect great things. He'll be leading this group someday soon. I have a feeling. So he's that next generation that's interested in the history. And we're glad to have him. So come and check out Atticus's booth as well. There's a lot of different things to come and see. So please come join us at the Great War Expo at Sergeant Alvin C. York State Historic Park on April 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to go ahead and sign off here, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks, Tanner.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.